blind, have low vision, or have another print disability, which makes reading, holding a book, or turning a page difficult or impossible. The content is copyrighted by the respective publishers. For more information, please visit us on the web at nfradioreading.org.
Around our area continues now on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Your reader for this hour is Sally Herzog. I go to our first paper, the Orchard Park Bee, and this is the Thursday, November 27th, 2025 edition. We go to our first article, Town Board Addresses Projects and Staff Changes. This is by Emma McGillicutt. The Orchard Park Town Board addressed the full agenda on Wednesday, November 19th, closing out several public works projects and making a series of appointments that will take effect when the new administration begins in January. The meeting opened with updates on three public works projects. The board approved the final change order and release of remaining funds for L&L Plumbing and Heating, the contractor for the multi-use maintenance fuel facility project. Town engineers reported that construction is finished and ready to be closed out. Members also approved the closeout and final payment for the multi-use maintenance salt and topsoil superstructure project. The contractor, Hybrid Building Solutions, completed all required work earlier this month. The third project involved the Berg Road Pump Station, where testing showed that the generator needed a larger fuel line. The board approved a change order with Stenzel Electrical Construction Incorporated to complete the modification. Members voted to approve amendments to the 2026 ad valorem and tentative benefit basis budget, then adopted both budgets for the upcoming fiscal year. The budget set funding levels for town departments and services beginning January 1st. The board approved a resolution naming Supervisor-elect Joseph Liberti as the town's Equal Business Opportunity Officer, starting in 2026. The designation allows the incoming supervisor to handle responsibilities related to state reporting requirements. To assist the Planning and Community Development Department, which has been operating with fewer staff following a recent retirement, the board authorized a request to seek candidates for an administrative clerk for the civil service list. In judicial appointments, members named Chuck Messina, interim town justice, effective January 1st. The position will fill the vacancy created when Judge Yorgi DeRosa begins his new assignment with the New York State Supreme Court. The building department will add part-time support through the appointment of retired code enforcement officer John Whitman. His duties include inspections and permit reviews as needed. The board also approved a five-year agreement that continues Orchard Park's participation in the Western New York Stormwater Coalition. The agreement outlines training, reporting responsibilities, and annual membership fees through 2030. Members authorized an extension of the town's dispatch agreement and approved a commercial parking permit and a 2025 stable permit. The board accepted a donation from the Community Activity Council of Orchard Park to purchase a TKO air raid rower for the Activity Center fitness room. To close the meeting, the board scheduled a public hearing on December 17th to consider a request to rezone a portion of property on California Road from residential use to industrial use. Orchard Park BOE highlights school district in Points of Pride presentation. This is by Joseph Clenard. Orchard Park Superintendent of Schools, David Lilick, gave a Points of Pride presentation during last week's Board of Education meeting. This presentation, as a part of the school district's strategic plan, served as a way to honor and acknowledge several people and events going on and around the schools since the last meeting. First, the board took time to recognize Eggert Elementary student Allie T., who received the Horace Mann Award at Buffalo State University on November 6th. This award celebrates the achievement of K through 12 students with disabilities across academics, arts, athletics, and more. Then the board reflected on several activities that took place over the past few weeks, including Orchard Park High School seniors' trip to Pickleball Island, the high school drama club's production of Never After Happily, and Orchard Park Middle School's production of Beauty and the Beast Jr. Lastly, the board recognized the district's school-related professionals and honored them during SRP Appreciation Day. SRP ensures our schools run smoothly and safely, said Lilac. From greeting students with a smile as they arrive at school, helping them transition safely from buses and cars, to supporting teachers and administrators in countless ways that make our school welcoming, organized, and ready for learning. Their dedication allows us to provide the excellent education our students deserve, and it does not go unnoticed. In other news, the board approved the adoption of 4 new policy revisions. These revisions include policies 7513, Administration of Medication, 7521, Student with Life-Threatening Health Conditions and or Anaphylaxis, 7522, Concussion Management and New Policy, and 7523, Opioid Overdose Prevention. These policy revisions were made at the recommendation of Superintendent Lilac. Additionally, the board approved the combination of the Orchard Park CSD Girls Wrestling Program with Frontier CSD, Hamburg CSD, and East Aurora UPSD for athletic participation. The board also accepted donations from 3 different parties across several areas of the school district. First, the board accepted a $100 donation from Robin Young for the high school's 2025 homecoming. Next, the board accepted a $1,200 donation from the American Heart Association for the physical education and wellness programs at Eggert Elementary. And lastly, the board accepted a $1,000 donation from the Quaker Marching Band Booster Club to cover the cost of percussion instruction. The next Board of Education meeting will be held at 7 p.m. on Tuesday, December 9th. Stephanie Hall to lead Ellicott Elementary. Stephanie Hall, assistant principal at Eggert Elementary School, has been named for the next principal of Ellicott Elementary School in the Orchard Park Central School District. The Board of Education unanimously approved her appointment on Tuesday, November 18th. Following a recommendation from Superintendent David Lilac, Hall is set to assume the position on Monday, November 24th. Hall was selected after a comprehensive interview process that included parents, community members, and district staff. Superintendent Lilac said Hall was recommended based on her understanding of instructional practices and her ability to lead a school community. Since 2023, Hall has served as assistant principal at Eggert Elementary, where she advanced instructional practices and worked to strengthen school community engagement. During her time at Eggert, she set goals to improve oral reading fluency, supported the rollout of district's new English language arts curriculum through instructional rounds and data-driven planning, and collaborated with staff to implement instructional strategies. Hall has also enhanced school culture and family communication by streamlining staff and family newsletters and by partnering with the parent-teacher organization and the Wellness Committee on safety initiatives and community events. Prior to joining Orchard Park, Hall taught for 12 years in the Grand Island Central School District. In a statement, Hall said, she is honored to lead Ellicott Elementary and looks forward to working with the students, faculty, and staff. I look forward to working together to ensure that Ellicott continues to be a place where all students feel safe, supported, and inspired to learn and grow, she said. She also stated that building positive relationships with every member of the Ellicott community will be her top priority. Howe will join Assistant Principal Alicia Brown in leading Ellicott Elementary. Together with the faculty and staff, they stated that they will strive to continue the district's work to maximize the potential of every student every day. Goldfish Swim School opens a new location in Orchard Park. This is by Emma McGillicutt. Families in the South Towns are getting a first look at Goldfish Swim School's new Orchard Park location, which recently held a ribbon cutting and a series of open house and family swim events ahead of its full launch in 2026. Located at 3310 Southwestern Boulevard, the school marks the company's second Western New York location, joining its Williamsville site. The Orchard Park facility was designed to provide indoor, year-round swim instruction for children ages 4 months to 12 years old in a safe and family-friendly environment. Regional manager Allison Yax said the decision to expand into Orchard Park reflected strong community demand. Opening a second Goldfish Swim School was a natural next step as they continue our commitment to be a best local swim and water safety resource for Buffalo area families. Yax said, for years, Southtown families have traveled to our Williamsville location, and this expansion offers a more convenient option in the area. The school has attracted local families to explore the new facility before registered lessons start. We have been thrilled by the warm welcome we have received from the Orchard Park community, Yax said. We have been welcoming families into Goldfish Swim School for free open house and family swim events to see our facility and learn more about our curriculum. The facility features a 90-degree shiver-free pool, a small class size model with a 4-to-1 student-to-teacher ratio, private and family-friendly changing rooms, warm showers, a hair-drying station, and an air-conditioned viewing gallery for parents. Children also receive weekly prizes, and instructors celebrate milestones with ribbons and high fives. Yax said the school anticipates high enrollment once class officially begin. Our small class group classes run every half an hour so we can accommodate swimmers of all different levels, she said. We anticipate welcoming over 1,500 swimmers to our pool in 2026. Staff members complete background checks and receive CPR, first aid, and lifeguard certifications, in addition to extensive in-house curriculum training. Team members undergo ongoing professional development to ensure consistent instruction. Beyond regular lessons, Goldfish Swim School in Orchard Park will offer family swim times and party packages for its members. The school also provides free water safety presentation to local schools, organizations, and community groups to promote awareness of the dangers of drowning and to teach children and parents critical water safety skills. Requests for presentations can be sent to swimorchardpark@goldfishss.com. Yax stated that drowning remains the leading cause of accidental death for children under age 4, making early swim lessons and water safety education crucial. Goldfish curriculum aligns with American Academy of Pediatrics recommendations that children begin formal swim instruction by age 1, emphasizing skill-building water confidence and safety knowledge. Families interested in registering for lessons can receive an introductory pricing for the duration of their enrollment by calling 716-539-4444 50. The official grand opening is scheduled for January 24th and will be open to the public. And before we move to our next paper, we'd like to tell you you're listening to Around Our Area on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. And we move on to the West Seneca Bee, and this is the Thursday, November 27th, 2025 edition. We go to our first article, Town Board Tables, Clocks Rezoning Request. This is by Eric Kepler. After a contentious public hearing that lasted 2.5 hours and counting, the West Seneca Town Board voted on Monday to table a rezoning request from Deanna Harfuck, the owner of Clocks Grove. The rezoning would allow for the construction of a boutique hotel on Clocks property, but was met with considerable opposition from many members of the audience in the courtroom that was standing room only. "Listen to your people," resident John Orsini told the town board. "The people clearly don't want this. You work for us." Clocks, a 16.3-acre wedding and event venue located at 1245 Seneca Creek Road that originally opened in 1955, was acquired by Harfuck from the Clock family in October of 2022 for $2.5 million. "My vision from the beginning was what a great opportunity I had this in mind. I have 30 plus years of hospitality, and I'm very confident in my experience to run this," Harfuck said. "I'm investing a lot of money. We have all of the policies and procedures in place to ensure that we are doing the best we can to be successful at this project and to ensure the safety of our guests." The $4 million expansion would see the creation of a 5 one-story hotel buildings with 5 units in each, with the potential to add 3 more buildings in 2 to 3 years. The project would also add 199 parking spaces and fire pits on original request to add for a variance to sell liquor was scrapped by the applicant. The project was recommended for approval by the planning board in October. One condition of that recommendation, however, was that the rooms only be rented out to Clocks guests, not just anyone looking for a room in Western New York. The applicant has said they will not comply with that request. "The goal is to reach our potential. We have a lot of room for growth," Harfuck said. "We're underperforming right now for our property. We want to be successful, and this is a smart business plan. I would hope for a 10 to 20% bump in events after we build this. Most of the crowd were neighbors who wanted no part of this. The room was filled with angry shouts and had to be quieted numerous times. Of the 32 times someone approached a podium for public comment, including some more than once, and the dozens more comments posted on Facebook, all but 4 were strongly against the project. One man presented the board with 400 signatures that he had collected in opposition to the project. Probably the most outspoken was resident James Raymond, who pointed to political motivations as a cause for concern. All 5 board members sit on the Republican committee for the town of West Seneca. In all of the town, there is one endorsed business, and that is Clocks Grove. So we have current town board members that have hosted events at Clocks Grove, Raymond said. We have board members who have had fundraisers there and paid a lot less than the usual cost. Those optics are a concern. Other residents pointed out more potential issues, including already overwhelmed sewers, increased traffic, water flow, and pressure, the town's already suspect electrical grid, deer, loud parties, and the inability to enforce regulations, concerns over additional development in the future, the project's effect on property values, and the idea that spot rezoning is a bad precedent and inconsistent with the town's master plan. The handful of residents who were in favor of the project said the town should welcome the investment and would benefit from the addition of jobs. Another suggested it might reduce the number of DWIs following events by providing participants with a place to stay following an event. The applicants acknowledged that some of the residents had brought up legitimate points and asked the town board for a chance to reconfigure their application. Supervisor Gary Dixon agreed. "I think they deserve another shot at this," he said. The crowd was having none of it, hoping to see the request voted down, or, at the very least, see the board members go on record for or against. When Dixon made the motion to table the request, the room dissolved into accusations and shouting. "What you're getting ready to do is delay this vote, because this town board has not had this room as packed as it is tonight. There is nothing that they can do on that site design that's going to change your mind on a vote tonight. That is a stall tactic that has been used by this board before to take these residents that have come out here on their own time to voice their concerns, and now asking them to come back at another meeting and be opposed to it again," Raymond said. "Do not delay this vote. You have all the information you need." When the vote to table passed by a 4-1 vote, with only Councilman Scott Robertson voted against, the room erupted further into profanity, and several residents had to be physically removed by officers. "I think we should keep the public hearing open, pending resubmission by the applicant," Dixon said. BOE approves redistricting plan. And this is by Eric Kepler. The West Seneca Board of Education voted unanimously last week to adopt a redistricting plan that had been put forth by the school superintendent, Dr. Lisa Krueger. The plan that was adopted is similar to the one Krueger presented at the October 7th BOE meeting, although this final version has some alterations that reflect resident suggestions that were made during the 3-week public comment period. "We didn't come into this with our minds made up," Krueger said. "We worked, reworked, and reworked it again. There have been refinements and tweaks along the way based on the feedback they were getting from stakeholders." The feedback period was active, with 958 responses over the 3 weeks. Redistricting has been a longstanding and often contentious issue that has seen a number of short-term fixes applied in recent years. Among the responses, 757 were parents or family members, 79%, while 229 were school staff or teachers, 24%. 56 were community members at 6%, and 8 were students at 1%. Among the responses, 61% agreed that the district had been responsive to feedback, while 16% did not. And 59% felt that the district had created a long-range plan for future use of school buildings and facilities, while 21% did not. "There is a desire for us to make a decision and to take action," Krueger said. "There is a consensus on prioritizing the overall well-being of the children and ensuring effective long-term planning is in place. If we can solve this with making the fewest students move possible, that was preferred." Reflecting that feedback, the first phase of the plan calls for the reconfiguration in fall of 2026 in Clinton at Northwood Elementary Schools, moving that process a year earlier than originally planned. Clinton will have students in pre-K to second grade, while Northwood will have students in grades 3 to 5. Then, in fall of 2027, the second phase will effectively do the same thing on the west side of the town. Ellendale and Winchester Potters will have students in pre-K to second grade, while the West Elementary will have students in grades 3 to 5. In order to do this right and do this well, we believe that it's much more important for us to look at this not as redistricting and solving elementary and middle school capacity issues, but really looking at a comprehensive way for how do we best want to use our buildings long-term and for the future, Kruger said. Other phases, which were not included in this vote, include centralizing services in the Winchester building, which is currently being used by Erie Winbosis until 2027. BOCES will still use some class space in the building moving forward, keeping it eligible for state aid. Kruger also envisions the facility housing a family support center, the clothing closet, central registration, and potentially a boys and girls club. East Elementary would house all of the district offices, which right now are spread out among 3 different buildings. This would also allow the district to sell the Ebenezer building, which is in need of repairs and not eligible for state aid. Also in the long-term plan, the district would fill in the swimming pools at East and West Middle Schools, which are a large expense for facilities deemed unnecessary. This action will be on May's budget vote as a capital improvement project. If approved, the pool areas will be repurposed into additional instructional space. There is also plans for the construction of a new bus transportation center by 2029, although it could be sooner if a suitable location is found. Now that the first 2 phases of the plan are approved, the next steps include communicating the finalized plan, provide support for families who will be transitioning, finalize bus routing plans, adjust start and end times, adjust staffing, and develop plans to move equipment. This allows us to focus on 2 to 3 schools at a time, Kruger said. It helps us to focus our moves, deal with the anticipated transportation issues, and keep families together. Winchester Potter's playground set to be demolished. This is by Eric Kepler. The playground at Winchester Potter's will undergo an emergency demolition as soon as possible. West Seneca School Superintendent Dr. Lisa Krieger told the board at the Board of Education last week. The reason for the demolition is safety concerns, she said, providing photos of cracked structures, rusted supports, and broken railings. That's a tetanus shot at best and a significant injury at worst, Krieger said. We cannot get replacement parts for it. Once the area is leveled, the district will purchase 1 piece of playground equipment for approximately $30,000 out of its general fund, which will not be eligible for state aid. The district plans to add additional pieces of equipment as part of the next capital improvement project as part of the budget vote on May 19, 2026 for the 26-27 school year. The most cost-effective way for the district to purchase equipment for our district and for the residents is to do so through a capital improvement project where we get state aid back, Kruger said. The issue of playground upgrades has been an increasing priority in recent years for the district. Securing funds for repairs was put to voters in December of 2023, but it didn't pass. we are prioritizing the schools and the playgrounds that are in the greatest need of replacement, with Winchester Potters being at the top of the list, Kruger said. And before we move to our next paper, we'd like to tell you you're listening to Around Our Area on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. And we now move to the East Aurora Bee, and this is the Thursday, November 27, 2025 edition. We go to our first article, Streamlines and Simplifies. Town of Aurora approves formal flag policy. This is by Justin Sullivan. The Town of Aurora Board unanimously approved a new policy governing when flags on town property may be lowered to half staff, formally outlining mandatory observances, local discretion, and procedures intended to ensure fairness and transparency. Under the new town policy, adopted on Monday, November 24th, during an otherwise short regular town board meeting, authority over flag-lowering decisions rests with the town board, with administration handed by the town supervisor or a designated official. The town would be required to lower flags whenever directed by the governor of New York. Mandatory half-staff observances would also include Memorial Day from sunrise until noon, Peace Officers Memorial Day on May 15th, unless it falls on Armed Forces Day, Patriots Day on September 11th, and Pearl Harbor Remembrance Day on December 7th. The one-page policy also allows the town board to issue proclamations lowering flags in limited local circumstances. These include the line of duty death of U.S. Armed Force member who resided in the town, the line of duty death of a first responder serving within the town, or the death of a current town official or employee. Requests for local proclamation will now need to be submitted to the town clerk, who would verify eligibility under the policy before forwarding the request to the supervisor or designee. Once approved, the supervisor will issue written notice to staff, including when flags should be lowered. The policy emphasizes that the policy is designed to be content neutral and viewpoint neutral. If approved, flags will not be lowered for private individuals, organizations, or public figures who do not fall under the designated categories, regardless of political affiliation or prominence. To promote transparency, the town said they will maintain a public record of all flag status decisions, including the reason for lowering flags and any board action related to those decisions. The discussion comes after municipalities across the country pushed back against the proclamation from President Donald Trump back in September, ordering that flags across the country fly half-staff for flags flown on land and half-mast for flags flown at sea in honor of alt-right podcast Charlie Kirk, who was assassinated on September 10th while addressing an audience at Utah Valley University in Utah, the first stop of the fall of 2025 season for the American Comeback Tour, a speaking and debate series planned by Turning Point USA to conservative youth organizations he co-founded. Municipalities that decided to follow the president's orders and lowered their flags to half staff to honor Kirk, whose views on racism, feminism, and Gaza-Israel conflict divided individuals across the political aisle, also saw criticism from community members who questioned the political activists' impact to the respective communities to warrant lowering the flag at half-staff. Last month, around 20 community members gathered in Hamlin Park to remember Kirk on what would have been the late Turning Point CEO 32nd birthday. The United States flag code, a set of federal guidelines for the display and treatment of the American flag, outlines rules for displaying the flag, such as during holidays, and how it should be treated in various situations, like being flown at half staff or placed on a casket. The U.S. flag code grants the U.S. president or a state's governor the authority to order flags to be flown at half staff for the death of other current or former former officials, as well as individuals the president deems significant. Congress had previously ruled that while the flag code is outlined in the U.S. flag code, the code is primarily a guideline rather than enforceable law. While the flag policy allows the president to alter rules regarding the display of the flag with a proclamation, the policy subjectivity, which stems from the varying cultural, political, and personal meanings people assign to the flag, allows for local governments and citizens to go against the president's requests. Despite the policy's proposed dividing residents online, the town board did not hear a single comment from community members during the moments leading up to the policy adoption. Town of Aurora Supervisor Charles Snyder applauded the bipartisan board for their work developing a fair and transparent policy. Snyder remains the only Republican member of the town board. "I want to thank everyone for this policy, more than you know," Snyder said. Following the approval, Town of Aurora Councilman Raymond Raisin recommended the new policy. "The policy streamlines and simplifies the flag process," Raisin said. "It's a good policy." Erie County debuts new tool to help residents track winter storm impacts. Winter weather is on the horizon, but beginning this winter, Erie County residents and visitors will have another tool in their safety kits. The county recently debuted the Erie County Winter Weather Storm Scale, a new website rich with weather information to help people make informed decisions and stay safe. The site can also be used for tracking storms and obtaining accurate, up-to-the-minute information on the severity and path of the storm this winter. Based on the Winter Storm Severity Index, the ECWSS features color-coded maps detailing the impacts of snow events countywide and at the local level, with users able to track the snow as it falls, where they are, or anywhere in the county. Also included are cross-sections of the New York State Thruway in Erie and adjacent counties, showing weather impacts there, maps detailing blowing snow impacts and their locations, snowfall probabilities, and storm histories, and much more. Developed in collaboration with Erie County, SUNY Albany, and the SUNY Albany Center of Excellence in Weather and Climate Analytics, the ECWSS presents a real-time map of winter weather-related impacts to people by demographic and places within the community. According to the county, the website is updated hourly, approximately 15 minutes past every hour, using the latest available NOAA data. Erie County Executive Mark Polenkars recently joined Deputy County Executive Lisa M. Shimera, Commissioner of Public Works Bill Geary, and departmental personnel, Commissioner of Homeland Security and Emergency Services Dan Neverett Jr., and personnel from SUNY Albany to introduce the new tool. "When winter weather hits, our response is predicated on having the best, most up-to-date information on what's happening out there," said Polenkars. "Knowing the severity, path, and projected timeline of winter storms is a huge aid in keeping roads as clear as possible and residents as safe as possible. The county's top officials added, the ECWSS puts that same knowledge in the public's hands as well, so that anyone with an internet connection can get the latest information on storm conditions, snowfall rates, blowing snow areas, even the cross-section of the thruway to check conditions there. It is color-coded, so it's easy to see where conditions are good or bad, and there are multiple tabs with related information. I encourage everyone to check it out, be familiar with it, and stay safe this winter. The ECWSS can be found at www.nyswrcc.org/weather/ECWSS-index.html. Before I go on to our next paper, we'd like to tell you you're listening to Around Our Area on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. And we move on to the Sun, and this is the Friday, November 28th, 2025 edition. Going to our first article, following budget adjustments, Town of Hamburg adopts 2026 budget with 3.92% tax increase. This is by Chris Graham. Residents in the town of Hamburg will still be seeing a tax increase for the 2026, just not as much as was originally proposed. The Hamburg Town Board, following a budget adjustment, voted to adopt a budget with a 3.92% tax increase. The proposed tax increase under this supervisor's budget was 7.46%. The amendments and the adopted budget both passed with 3-2 votes, with interim town supervisor Kathy Ripzinski and council members Elizabeth Farrell Lorenz and Daniel Kozib in favor, and council members Megan Comerford and Frank Bogalski against. Both Comerford and Bogalski also voted against overriding the tax levy cap for the 2026 spending plan on November 3rd. The adopted budget, which does exceed the tax cap, will see residents have a tax bill increase of $43 for the year on a home assessed at $100,000. Under the supervisor's budget, the tax bill increase would have been $90. The major factor attributing to the budget exceeding the tax cap was the establishment of the garbage district, which had a cost of $4 million. The establishment of the district will result in residents saving hundreds of dollars in their refuse bills, with the contracted rate with modern disposal being $239.91 per year over 3 years for each housing unit. Residents can opt out of the service, but it will still be included on an individual's tax bill. Since the supervisor's budget was released in late September, board members have been examining ways to cut into the tax increase. On November 14th, 6 pages of budget amendments came in. The adjustments included increased revenues, while also featuring department cuts. The total changes in revenue were $491,000. $565. The total changes in expenses were $604,830. There was definitely more expenses than increases in revenue, said Finance Director Patrick Shea. What we went through again is the historical comparisons of what the departments were spending, where that was in relation to the budget. As we looked at it again, another 2 months down the road from the release of the supervisor's budget, we saw there was a potential to cut some of those amounts, more now than when we had 2 months of information. Comerford noted that one of the adjustments included the increase for recreation fees in 2026. The adapted budget also includes not adding 4 plow drivers to the highway department. Farrell Lorenz said that those would have been 4 additional hires, but would not affect current staffing levels. Comerford responded by saying that Highway Superintendent Ed Hughes had been asking for additional staffing for years, with the board always telling him to come back next year. "I'm concerned we're continuing to push the problem down the road until we don't have plow drivers," Comerford said. Farrell Lorenz said she discussed a plan with Hughes involving a number of efficiencies to be addressed in the department before going forward with adding personnel. Since the board began discussing the 2026 budget publicly in October, Bogalski said he would not vote for any budget that had a tax increase. He stuck to his word, not casting a yes vote for the budget. "Everything keeps going up, and I thought it was prudent to vote no on the budget because it's resulting in a large increase in taxes for our community," Bogalski said. "I thought we could have done better to lower costs and look at other cost savings." Comerford said what she believes is an overestimate of revenues coming in, along with the highway department not adding to its ranks, were her main reasons for voting against the budget. Comerford added there were no conversations by the board about the amendments prior to them being released days before the November 17th budget adoption. Farrell Lorenz said, due to there being so many moving pieces up to the last minute, there wasn't a chance to present the amendments earlier than they did. "There wasn't a single department who didn't come forth and was willing to participate in the conversations, not only about every aspect of the budget, but looking ahead and laying some good groundwork for the future," Farrell Lorenz said. Over 10.7 million dollars in contracts awarded for Phase 4 capital project work at Union Pleasant Elementary School. This is by Chris Graham. The Hamburg Central School District has now locked its contractors to begin work on the Phase 4 of the district's 2021 capital project, most of that work taking place at the district's oldest building, Union Pleasant Elementary School. The Hamburg Board of Education awarded 5 contracts totaling over $10.7 million for work on the school. The contracts include site work to Matt Colo Excavating, LLC for $196,000, general construction to Concept Construction Corporation for $5,449,000, electric construction by Frey Electric Construction Corporation, Incorporated for $1,898,000, roofing construction to Grove Roofing Services, Incorporated for $1,608,820, and demo and abatement construction to Metro Contracting and Environmental Incorporated for $1,558,900. Representatives from Turner Construction said these bids came in lower than the company was projecting. With the lower bids, Turner Construction was able to add alternate contracts for additional work. Superintendent Thomas Adams said previously there was $21.3 million remaining and the 2021 capital project. Things are getting cheaper and we're getting more work, said Cameron Hall, president of the BOE. Some of the construction will include work on the corridors and stairways on the Pleasant side, updating bathrooms, improving fire and safety access for the doors on the Pleasant side, and roof work. Adams previously said work will occur on the inside and outside of the school building. A major component of Phase 4 construction will include work on Pleasant Auditorium. The Pleasant side of the school building was built in 1925. Turner Construction will be bringing more contracts to the board to potentially award in December, including agreements for plumbing and mechanical work. This will bring the total contract for the work to around $15 million. Work on the school is expected to begin in the spring. It will be a two-year project. Village of Blaisdell officials, residents, see improvement in noise issues on Martin Avenue. This also is by Chris Gordon. Some residents on Martin Avenue who complained at a recent Village Blaisdell meeting about speeding told the village board that while a lot of activity has slowed down, there are still some issues they would like addressed. Resident Gail Cruson said the late night noise and dangerous driving at times is something that she hears and hopes police will continue to restore safety and peace in the neighborhood. It's been ongoing, said Cruson, who noted that it has been quieter lately. She is concerned that there is a pattern where it will pick up again. Village Mayor Rob Hefner said the board is limited in what it can do, but that they will stay on top of the situation to make sure the problems continue to get solved. We keep working with the police on that, Hefner said. Dennis Feldman, who heads the command staff for the Blaisdell Village Police Department, said he talked to the neighbors who were among those who have been at the root of the issue and warned them about the potential consequences of their behavior. They know we're watching, said Feldman, noting that if they're loud during hours, there is a noise ordinance that they could be charged with disorderly conduct. He is hopeful the warnings will help continue to keep the street quieter. Feldman said last month that he would also put patrol cars out to help with speeding issues on Martin Avenue. He said he knows this has been an issue, noting that he once pulled over a car driving 70 miles per hour on that road. But he also said he has seen improvements over the last month. We're working diligently for you, Feldman said. In another matter, the village will hold its annual Christmas tree lighting ceremony at 6 p.m. on Saturday, December 6th. The board will hold its next meeting at 4:30 p.m. Wednesday, December 17th at the Blaisdell Village Hall. Residents irked by early plans to build six contractor shop warehouses on Lakeshore Road. This is by Chris Graham. Even though the plans are just getting off the ground, residents in Woodlawn have a plethora of concerns about the potential development of a 7.46-acre parcel to house six contractor shop warehouses on Lakeshore Road. We're looking to build flex storage buildings for contractors, said Brandon Santa, developer, about the parcel that is near the Gateway Building. Everything is going to be indoor storage. It shouldn't bother the neighbors. According to the plan we have, it should give them privacy on their side and flexibility on our side. Santa said he was living on the property as his home is in the development. While the project is in early stages, residents in the area have already written the Town of Hamburg Planning Board expressing concerns about the clear cutting of trees, runoff into Rush Creek, the condition of the property, and visibility, according to the Planning Board Chair Cindy Granachin. In regard to the clearing, Board Member Caitlin Chimera said an aerial view of the parcel through Google Maps showed that the parcel has no trees on it, right up to Rush Creek. She asked Santa if the clearing was done by permit. Santa said they had a tractor mow the property and code enforcement told them there was no issues. He added that large trees are left on the site near Rush Creek. It's quite barren in consideration to where it is by Rush Creek, Shamira said. Granachin asked if a history of the parcel could be obtained by either the planning department or code enforcement to look into some of the issues raised by residents. The buildings would include a 100-foot buffer from Rush Creek, but Granachin believes the buildings, as drawn on the initial plan, are way too close to Rush Creek. I'm very concerned about the closeness to Rush Creek in this drawing, Granachin said. Josh Rogers, a planning consultant for Wendell, said he believes the project would need a substantial amount of landscaping, including for the neighbors to the north of the development on Nelson Avenue. The site is not in the local waterfront revitalization program area and will not need a coastal consistency designation, Rogers said. Sean Hopkins, an attorney representing the developer, said the development will also live up to the performance standards of the M3 zone to ensure no vibrations and no risk of explosion or fire. The developer will be bringing back a revised early design of the plans to the planning board at its meeting on Wednesday, December 17th. You've been listening to Around Our Area, a weekly look at community newspapers from around Western New York. Your reader for this hour has been Sally Herzog. Thank you so much for listening.
Coming up next in the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service, we have the Ampole Eagle. At 4 o'clock, we have the Grand Island Niagara County Tribune Sentinel. And following that, at 5 o'clock, we have the Lockport Union Sun and Journal. Stay with us for these readings and more throughout the day. following program is intended for listeners who are blind, have low vision, or